Yes. So the All right, someone sent me the Wi-Fi password, but it seems to be working anyway, so I don't think it's an issue. Okay, good evening. Thank you for coming. Sorry for the technical wait over there. So the shiur is in memory of my mother, Andrea Friedman. Tonight is her yahrzeit. So I try to give some kind of shiur every year. And what I want to talk about is GPT, the infamous GPT, something that I've been working with a little bit actually. And this sort of like has become a topic that a million people have talked about now. Can GPT answer halakhic questions? Can you rely on halakhic questions asked and answered by GPT? So why am I talking about this? I have a little bit of background, both in the halakha side and also now this is part of my job. I've done some research in AI. I'm developing applications with AI. So I have some like knowledge of how these things work, and I think maybe there's an interesting perspective. So basically, the plan is going to be we're going to talk a little bit about what is GPT and AI and like how does all this stuff work? How is it working right now? And then we're going to talk about what kind of things GPT can accomplish in terms of halacha and sort of see if there's anything left for people to do. That's kind of the idea. Okay, so what is AI? Just as a background, right? Everybody's heard a million, it's like been in the news and whatever. AI is a type of is a field of computer science where the goal of the field is to make computers think and do tasks. More specifically, like people, right? Computers are already, just like classical computers, are already much more intelligent than people in certain ways, right? They can compute stuff, right? I can't compute like what 1,253,000 times 800, whatever it is, right, in a second. But a computer can compute that in a second. That's a kind of intelligence, right? We're not talking about like a sentient being, but it can do things. So the idea in AI is to make computers think and do cognitive tasks like people. So, for example, vision, seeing stuff, critical thinking, language, all of these kind of things, making intelligent kind of predictions based on some set of data. All of those things are like things that people can do pretty well, but at least in the past, computers couldn't do very well. And so AI is this whole field. How can we get computers to do this? And specifically within the world of AI, what's sort of like taken over is something called machine learning. And machine learning basically switches up the way that usually when you write a computer program, it's like you give a very detailed set of instructions. Like, you first do step one, then do step two. Then if the case is A, then do this. If the case is B, then do something else. You're defining all of the steps for every single stage and every scenario that the program might encounter. In machine learning, that's not how it works. Machine learning says, I'm going to give you some input, and you'll predict the most likely output. So let's say, you want to get the computer to tell the difference between a cat and a dog, which is surprisingly difficult to do with classical computing. Like think about how you would describe to someone how to tell the difference between a cat and a dog. Not clear. But in machine learning, you give the input a picture and it has to guess. Is it a cat? You create some sort of algorithm which allows it to guess. And then basically you feed it a ton of examples, and every time it updates, it has this ability to to update like a set of what are called parameters, which are sort of like probabilistic likelihood that something is a picture of a cat or something is a picture of a dog. So you'll feed it a whole bunch of examples. At first, it will be very bad at predicting it. You'll give it a cat, it'll only get it like, 2-5% of the time, or not better than random guessing. And then as it updates itself, it becomes more and more capable of predicting accurately. But it's always a probability, right? It's like, what is the most likely answer to this? If I take this input, what is the most likely output? It's always predicting some kind of likely outputs. Never 100% accurate. Even GPT is not. Whatever. Nothing is. No machine learning applications are 100% accurate. It's always predicting some output based on some input. Okay. Specifically, when we talk about GPT, the T stands for transformer, and this lives in the world of language processing. Without getting too technical, like you can imagine, if you would think about how to translate a sentence from one or a paragraph from one language to another, it's not clear like what you have to hold in mind at each phase of the translation. Do you have to have a whole sentence in mind? Sometimes you have to have the whole paragraph in mind. You need to know, like in some languages, this word is going to be conjugated based on some word that was five words before or is going to be five words later. It's not clear. In the transformer, they came up with this hack, which is that if you set it up the right way, you can just predict what the next most likely word is. You have your input, you have the current output, right? I don't want to go into the gritty details of an example, but you just predict what the next word is. That's all GPT ever does. It just was fed a ton of data, like the whole internet, and it knows how to pay attention to specific words to like figure out which word should be like, which words do I have to pay attention to in this sentence that will make it most likely so that I can predict the appropriate next word. Like if you want to translate, the European region or something, if from English into French, and you have the word the, so the in English is not conjugated, and it's not feminine or masculine, but in French it is. So if you have to translate the from English to French, you know that you need to pay attention to whatever word is being denoted by the when you translate, so you can figure out if it's supposed to be. So basically, that's all GPT is. It's set up with a ton of data, and it knows how to pay attention to what words you need to think about, and it's always just predicting the next word forever, ad nauseum. Don't close on your notes. I need the notes to be open. Okay, so it's very interesting because it turns out that if you apply enough human language, if you feed something enough human language, all the internet or whatever, basically now GPT can also do reasoning just by predicting what is the most likely next word of English to come out of this situation. It seems like some amount of reasoning capacity is like baked into our language. So it can compute, you can ask it to like do logical problems. We'll look at the benchmarks in a second if you haven't looked at them already. You can ask it to do word problems, remember things, whatever. And it can reason just based on predicting the next word. So, GPT now, this is what we have here in the first source, is very good at standardized tests. Every time they come out with a new version, they always do benchmark tests, and that's what we have here in the first source. And you can see how well it did on all of these different things. The first one is the bar exam, the uniform bar exam. I don't know exactly what that means. Somewhere in America, they have a uniform bar exam, which I guess is a combination of a bunch of different bar exams. I don't know. Anyway, it's a law test, right, that you need to pass to become a lawyer. GPT-4 up there is in the 90th percentile. The LSAT, law school admissions test, 88th percentile. The SAT, which is like the university admissions test. I'm sorry for people from South Africa. It's a university admission test, 93rd percentile. The GRE, which is what you need to take to get into graduate school, 80th, 90th percentile, etc. AP art history, AP biology, 100th percentile. So it does very, very well on these tests. It can reason, it can remember information fantastically. And one final point, just so we understand the applications afterwards to Halakha, how do you get information out of these models? You have this model, it's capable of predicting stuff. If you give it some input, it will take its, setup and predict some output. How does that work? So there's two options. Either you can prompt it, right? Whatever, you change the input. You can format the input in a certain way so that you get certain output, or you can do what's called fine tuning, which is where you modify the sort of system that makes the predictions with more data. So you could, GPT is trained on the internet. If you wanted it to be able to accurately talk about or predict language about, you know, I don't know, Russian, something that's not on the internet that you have, some body of data, you could update it so you could fine tune it so that it would be more capable of working in your specific field with your specific data. Like, you know, in the things that I do, the applications that I build, it's all about writing prompts. We're auto-generating content, technical writing content, and we just like come up with the right prompt. We'll say like, you know, here's some information about our product that we want to write an article for. Here's how you should write it. Here's the style that you should use, blah, 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 blah. I give a bunch of information and then it pops out content. Okay, so that's sort of a very fast background of AI, machine learning, how GPT works, which we need to understand this application to halacha. Questions, comments, concerns, tomatoes. So what does this mean in terms of halacha? I really think realistically, you know, what it would mean is you could fine-tune the model. You could add data to the model that would allow it to make predictions about or to give you information about halachic text, halachic content. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, you have to format it in a certain way, but at least in terms of the title of the shiur, the Rabbanut Smicha tests. So the Rabbanut Smicha tests are very formulaic. They have these, there's a set of books called Shu't Heichal Shlomo. Heichal Shlomo is the former headquarters of the Rabbanut next to the big synagogue on, King George Street. Mm-hmm. So there's this, someone wrote these books called The Response of Heichal Shlomo, which is basically like the questions from previous Rabbanut tests and how you would answer it to get a perfect score. So there's, I don't know, there's a whole series of these books. There's at least four, you know, several examples of each type of question. It would be very easy to come up with a data set that you could feed into GPT. And I think fairly easily you could teach it to just pass every single Rabbanut exam, at least at the level that a person who's taking the test can pass it. That would not be a problem. And it would be able to answer those questions at the same level, you know, and we call those people rabbis. So that's definitely a possible application. I think we could also do something else because GPT is really good at discovering patterns, right? You feed it a bunch of language and it'll discover patterns that you didn't think because it's just predicting what's the most the most likely next word, right? So it'll find patterns that you didn't know were there. So you could do something like feed it the entire set of the Chatam Sofer's tshuvot, or some pick your posek, somebody's tshuvas, and then you could say, here's a question, answer it in the style, how would the Chatam Sofer answer this question? And it will pick up, I'm assuming that like the Chatam Sofer has some pattern in the way that he answers things, a style, an approach, whatever, which appears all throughout his writing, which, you know, if you ask an academic, they might be able to tell you, I don't know. Then you could totally pick up the pattern and answer it in that style. What would his arguments be? What kind of sources would he quote? Whatever, that kind of stuff. You could, I think, fairly easily, trivially train GPT to do that as well. And that can include lambdas, what's called lambdas also, right? It just depends what kind of text you use. If instead of tshuva literature, you choose lambdas literature, so you'll feed in all of the, I don't know, whatever books of the briskers, and then you can say, you know, here's this text, analyze this. That would actually be hilarious because you could feed it any text and then see what it would say. But here's this Rambam or here's this passage from the phone book or whatever. Analyze this in the Brisker style and it would analyze it. Right? Those are things that I think with the current technology today are pretty easy. You know, if someone aggravated me enough and gave me enough free time, I could probably do it myself. Like, it's not that complicated. There's a lot of like magical thinking around AI and people are like, oh, AI eventually will just be able to, you know, make a robot with AI and it'll be just like a person. I don't know. All kinds of things might happen. But with the technology that exists right now, we could totally pull that off. So the question is, if that's the case, Can we imagine a scenario? Would it be okay to train up GPT this way and then get it to answer your halakhic questions? It can answer halakhic questions with the same competence of somebody that passed the Rabbanut Smicha tests, which may be an indictment of the Smicha tests. Don't get me wrong. Like, would it be okay to you rely on that as for psak halakha? That's really the question. And now we enter into playing a game here, which people seem to be playing these days with AI, which is like, find the human. Like, what inside of this story was unique to human beings that can't be replicated with artificial intelligence? That's what people have done. So I want to go over some of the existing reservations that I heard from people who dealt with this topic, and then I have a specific idea also. Has anyone, have either of you heard any reservations that people have about AI asking in halakha? Would you be comfortable asking an AI your halakha questions? Why not?
Get away with. I don't know, because everybody's different.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone's different. Okay, so this is good. It's one of the things I wanted to discuss, right? So do you have any thoughts? Right. Right. Right, because it doesn't actually know anything, yeah. Right? It doesn't know anything. It's just predicting. It's not, I mean, I don't know how consciousness works, but in my mind, when I say words, unless, you know, hopefully most of the time, first I like use some part of my brain where there's information stored and I recall that information and think about it. And then the language is just like the transmission device. But in GPT, there is no that part. It's just spewing, let's just imagine like the hyper intelligent person just like free form and like stream of consciousness spewing stuff. So yeah, so that's a problem. I think we can, I mean, it's not 100% solved yet, and definitely like just makes up stuff. That's what the experts call hallucinating. It hallucinates, right? But we can assume that that's going to be resolved, I think, probably. You know, even in the newest model of GPT, it's much better than it was before. It can never be totally, we can assume we can come up with some way of referencing and fact-checking. You know, like you can tell it to go check, you know, it's the sources against actual database material and see if it's the same for answering. There's all kinds of sophisticated ways you can get around it. Okay, but yes, there's always a possibility we'll just tell you absolute fake information. So in terms of your concern about, you know, people are different, and this is one of the things that people have raised, right? Halakhic answers are not cut and dried. There's all kinds of nuances, right? There's a which story did I have here? I had a story about this. Which one did I write in? I didn't. But a person, you know, you can just imagine a person, a rabbi might say, you know, that something is kosher for one person where, you know, they come and their entire Shabbos meal is going to be destroyed because of this issue, whatever kashrus issue it is, and it's hefsid meruba, they're going to lose, or it's Erev Shabbos, or whatever it is, or if the person is like a bal tshuva and they're not, you know, the rabbi knows they can't handle certain levels of stringency or whatever. There's all kinds of applications you would make for different people. And so some people argue, oh, that's it. Like the GPT is never going to learn how to do that. That's something you can only do if you have shimush, if you go learn with a rabbi and you see them answer questions, and that's learned through osmosis, right? So I think that's actually not a reasonable, it's not a great point. I mean, it is true. If you would just train, you know, the person on the Rabbanut Smicha test material, then they would be like some people who pass the Rabbanut. I'm really knocking the Rabbanut Smicha thing today. But, you know, there is no nuance there. But, you know, learning through osmosis is literally how GPT, how machine learning models learn, right? It's not like you sit down, you sit them down with a textbook and they just, you pass through examples and they pick up the patterns in the examples, which is basically learning through osmosis. So if you could, if we would have a reasonable body of literature, right? Like let's say you would shove in all the tshuva literature, and all the tshuva literature includes all these cases of Shas Hadchak and Hefsid Meruba and all these different things, I think those things would be picked up. And you could train the model to ask follow-up questions. Right? It's not like it's just going to be like, okay, I cut a thing with an onion with this kind of knife, and I put it into that kind of thing. Can I eat the soup? And it's not going to ask any follow-up questions. You can train it to ask, well, what is the situation? Are you, is it Shabbos? Is it, you're going to lose out on a lot of money or whatever? You could probably possibly train the model for, to catch those nuances. I think that that would be reasonable. So that is one of the reservations. I don't know if that's the best kind of. Some people argue that there's a formal requirement for a human being to answer halachic questions. I heard there's a podcast from David Lichtenstein. If you've heard this, the headlines here, his book is over here and around here. And then. So he did a couple of episodes on AI, and he brought on some guests. He brought on Rav David Cohen from Brooklyn. It's like a big posting, not the Israeli Rav David Cohen, the American Rav David Cohen. And he said, Rav David Cohen said, you can't rely on an AI to paskin because for Pesach, you need a Baal Horah. You need somebody who's, or a Mora Horah, excuse me. You need a person who's teaching you the way to be, to do Judaism. You can't just have a machine or a book or whatever. So, and okay, so that's, if that's the case, then that's the case. But not everybody agreed with that. He had other, Edward Herschel Schechter on from YU, or Herschel Schechter said, I don't know, why would you need that? If the machine is well-trained and knows how to answer the questions, so it knows how to answer the questions, it's possible to be a Dayan. Like for Dayanus, you need a person. That's the halacha, is that whoever can't be made, can't testify in Beit Din, also can't be a Dayan. But so you might need an actual person. But otherwise, it's not clear that, like, people look things up in books, right? So why are you allowed to do that? Right? What separates between the, and then, you know, there's certain questions that you won't look up in a book, but presumably that's only because of a level of, you know, your own perceived competence. At some point you say, like, this is too complicated for me, I'm going to ask somebody else. But it's not clear that you need a person to explain every halakhic question to you. If you do, then the game is over. But it's not, at least not accepted by everybody. The nuances thing we sort of discussed. Other reservation, Pesach involves human interaction. There's stuff that goes on in the Pesach halakha that's not just the halakha. So here I do have a story. Somebody came once to the Beis Halevi from Yosef Meir Soloveitchik the first, and on you know, the night before Pesach, and asked, you know, can I use milk for the four cups at the Seder? And he said, well, what's going on? Oh, like, I'm a blacksmith and whatever, and I haven't been doing so well, so I don't have so much money. So I wanted to know if I can allow to use milk. So then the Beis Halevi asked his wife to bring him some very large amount of money, way more than the cost of wine, and gave it to the person. And he said, oh, I don't want to take it. I don't want to take charity. And he said, no, it's a loan. I can't afford to, I'm the rabbi, I can't afford to just, like, give you this money, but it's a loan. You'll pay me back later. So the person left, and the Rebbetzin asked the Beis Halevi, that's a lot of money. That's way more money than you need for wine. And he said, no, you didn't think about it. If he's asking me if he can drink milk for the four cups, clearly he doesn't have meat, right, for the Seder. What kind of Seder is it going to be? So I need to give him money. I gave him money, not just for the wine, for everything. Okay? So that has nothing to do with Pesach Halacha. He didn't pass it in Halacha. We have no idea if the Beis Halevi thinks he can use milk for your, presumably you can't, right? But we have no idea if he said what he thinks. There's no Pesach Halacha there. There's just a human interaction. So unless we move into a very dystopic world, GPT is not going to be able to give you money for your Seder, even though some people would like that kind of outcome. There are people who are advocating for AI to take over all the like a charity distribution, because it can figure out the most efficient way to distribute charity, and then, or a food distribution for that matter, and we can just end world hunger. That sounds a little scary to me, but presumably that's not going to happen, right? So there is a human element to that goes beyond psak halacha. Mm-hmm. That's an argument some people make, and I agree with that. I mean, some people say maybe you can train an AI to sort of play on our psychological needs, and you can cause, you know, it can be like a therapist, or it can be like a best friend, or you can fall in love with it, or whatever. So maybe there could be some kind of, you could train the AI to be very empathetic or whatever, as to answering your shilas. But basically, the bottom line human interaction, I think that's a fair point. It's not going to happen. So that's that. I hear that. But the question is that it? Like, is that what's left for rabbis? Just to be the, you know, like the sort of nice face human interaction. So they can, like, you can come to the rabbi, he'll go ask GPT, he'll get the answer, and then he'll come back and tell it to you, like, in a nice way, or he'll see what else, you know, he'll schmooze with you over coffee or something. Like, that seems to be a little strange, if that's really what's left. So, I was thinking that there, you know, there might actually be some parts of psak halacha that GPT is not able to mimic. And it depends a little bit on the nature of what psak halacha is. How does it work? I think there's a debate that goes back basically to Chazal. Now we can actually read some sources. Basically to Chazal about what is halacha? Like when we receive the, what is halacha? Sounds like a very broad question, but when we receive the Torah on Har Sinai, let's be more precise, was there like one specific answer that's like the right answer to every single halakhic question? Or at the bottom, are there multiple possible answers to every question? I think this is a debate in Chazal. So we look in source number 3. This is one view. This is, you may have seen some statement like this before. Amar Chia Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. It's really source number 3, excuse me. Source 2 comes after 3 in logically before it in the social system. My dichtiva leim kakola dvarim asher diber Hashem imachem bahar. What does the Torah mean when it says, you know, upon them is like all the things that Hashem spoke to you in the on the mountain? Milamed. So what did God show Moshe on the mountain? Milamed shehar eyu hakadosh baruch hu leMoshe dikduke Torah v'dikduke sofrim. God showed Moshe details of the Torah and details of the sofrim. What is umah shesofrim atidin lechadesh? And everything that every rabbi in the future is eventually going to formulate. Umah unmainu. What does that include? Mikra Megillah, even the mitzvah of Mikra, reading Megillah Esther and Purim, which obviously was not relevant and clearly was instituted at some point later in history. All of those things were shown to Moshe at Har Sinai. So this statement and statements like it seem to indicate the Torah that was given at Har Sinai included every single possible detail, even future details that were not relevant at the time of Mount Har Sinai. Everything. And there is a view like this. Rav Shrira Golan takes this view. He held that he was trying, someone asked him why they don't see any arguments in the Mishnah until much later in the Tannaitic period. Like the early Tannaim never have any arguments. All the people in the Mishnah that argue are from like the last few generations of Tannaim. And he said that's very easy because before that there was no arguments. Why? Because we still had a Masorah which was complete. We knew every single pasuk, what it means, the halacha, how it derives, every possible argument and counter-argument, everything was organized 100%. And then we lost it. And so since then, we've been trying to recreate that knowledge. So if you take halacha this way, then, you know, really you're just trying to find the best answer. And maybe if GPT is very good at uncovering those kind of answers, then if GBT is really good at uncovering those kind of answers, then maybe that would be the right way to go. Cool. No, we're still in the middle. Please, welcome. So we, just as a 2-second recap, we discussed sort of what AI is, what machine learning is, how GPT works on a sort of technical level, the kinds of things that GPT would be capable of doing in terms of halakha, in my opinion, which would be, you know, predicting basic kind of answers, maybe figuring out sort of patterns and different kinds of poskim, how they would answer a question. And now we're trying to figure out, are there things that, you know, rabbis or humans can do that AI can't mimic? That's where we're at. And we're talking a little bit about the nature of what halakha is, to try and figure that out. So one view here is every single idea that was ever, you know, that was ever included in halakha was encapsulated in Farsi. The other view is, though, that there is some sort of fundamental pluralism in halakha. For every answer, there's more than one answer. Maybe there are 80 answers, as we'll see over here. So this is in source number 4. Amar Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chanilai, Ilu Nitna Torah Chatucha, Lo Haita Midat Raglaim Lemore Shayoreh. So Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chanilai said, if the Torah had been given cut and dried, like what we just described, every question has one answer and there's a right answer or you're wrong, then there would be no place for poskim, for halachic people answering halachic questions to stand. But now that the Torah has all kinds of different possibilities, im timei yesh matmim kiyotzebo, im tiher yesh matarim kiyotzebo. If a posek has to declare someone, like, you know, is in a situation and he sees he needs to say something as usser, then there's an option, there's a way that, you know, there's an argument to be made to say that it's not allowed. If he has to say that it's allowed, there's an argument to say that it should be allowed. Amar b'yanai Torah shenatan hakadosh baruch hu l'moshe nitnelo ba'arbeim v'tisha panim. Tamei u'ba'arbeim v'tisha panim tahor. The Torah that was given to Moshe was given so that for every question, there, you know, every question of tamei and tahor, pure and impure, there's 49 arguments to say this thing is pure, and 49 counter arguments to say the thing is not, it is impure. Shenei Amar v'diglo b'gematria 49, Amar lo heach avidat, Amar lo rabu hatmeim tamei rabu matarim tar. So the way I think Rashi, or not Rashi here, because kind of the way some of the Rishonim say here is, so Moshe says, so now what are we supposed to do? You gave us the Torah where every single question has, you know, like a bunch of arguments for each direction. And the answer is we follow the majority. So this is a totally different view of halakha, which seems to say that for every question, at the end, after you do all the analysis and all the analysis is over, and even if you did it perfectly, there's going to be a range of possible answers. Answers like this, answers like that. So where does the final, you know, when you go to rabbi, hopefully it doesn't tell you like 80 possible answers to your question. Where does the final answer come from? So from beyond the analysis, it's not coming from the sources, it's coming from somewhere else, from the philosophy, from the personality, a religious personality of the posek, some other place which is beyond just the pure analysis. This is, I don't know if it's radical. Maybe it is radical. We don't usually think about halakha this way, or maybe we do, I don't know. But it's definitely, there's a source for it. I think this debate has continued throughout history. The route, you can see people lining up on different sides of this argument. So, if we're going to take this view that halakha is fundamentally at the bottom, somehow pluralistic, there's more than one answer to every question, and something else, the posek is providing something beyond just the analysis of the sources to answer the question. The question is, what is that something? And can GPT do that too? So one option is that something is some kind of metaphysical assistance that the posek gets. And this is what's over here. Would you care for a... this is what we see over here in source number 2. Which we won't, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing inside. I think it's getting late for reading all these giant blocks of text inside. But source number 2 is from the Sefer called Chut HaMeshulash, which was written by the grandson, I believe, of the Chatam Sofer. And he's describing here how his grandfather, I think it's his grandfather, would he was at a certain point, the Chatam Sofer was like the most sought out rabbi in certainly Eastern Europe, maybe all of Europe. And so he was answering questions all, like he had to write a ton of answers. And he wouldn't, and he, the grandson observed that he wouldn't like always spend so much time writing the answers. He would get a question, look at it a little bit, maybe look up a couple of things, and then he has to write the answer and send it. And he asked him, how can it be? You know, these are like serious questions. People are sending you these lot of questions. You need to think about it. Why aren't you waiting to weigh it out? They're just like writing the answer and sending it back. And he said, listen, I don't have time to write, to, you know, consider each question in depth. But I know that in every generation, God chooses one or two, a handful of people that, you know, are relied on to answer, you know, the questions of the generation. And he helps those people to be able to answer the questions accurately. So even if my proofs, that's what he writes here, even if my proofs are not actually correct sometimes, the answer is definitely right. So it's fine. So even though I didn't spend all the time to weigh out every single detail and I just like wrote the answer and sent it back, it's okay. I have like siyata dishmaya, some kind of assistance to answer the question. That's what he writes over here. This is something people quote from the Chasam Sofer, that there's siyata dishmaya, poskim get special help from God to answer questions. And that's what he writes here. So that's one possibility. And certainly, if there's siyata dishmaya, so does GPT have siyata dishmaya? You think it's a silly question, like it's not a person. But some people said no. But Rav Hershel Schechter, when David Lichtenstein asked him, said, well, maybe, yeah, because it's really the people that trained him. If, as long as they have siyata dishmaya, so then the GPT also has siyata dishmaya. Why not? I don't know. Pardon? Yeah, so maybe, who knows how siyata dishmaya works? If this becomes the primary way for people to, maybe that's the argument, you know, if we elect that GPT is now the primary source for our halakhic questions, so maybe the God will make sure that GPT answers the questions correctly. Possible. Another option here, though, aside from some sort of metaphysical siyata dishmaya assistance, is that what's really happening here is that the sort of religious personality of the posek is emerging. Like we said, there's an analysis, they do an analysis, but even at the end of the analysis, the sources can go this way, the sources can go that way. It's not clear. There's a range of possible answers. And what's really coming out is the personality of the posek, the worldview, the way that they understand things, their background, whatever it is, that's what's emerging together with the psa. And the person that really wrote about this a lot is Moshe Feinstein. In the introduction to his, again, we're not going to read everything inside, but the introduction here, I have a quotation here from Igrot Moshe from his Tshuvas. So he writes that, you know, even if we assume that there is some emes lahalacha, like some fundamental truth of halacha, so even if we assume that such a thing exists, we're not necessarily going to be able to find it, because who knows if, you know, any rabbi in some given generation, we know that we're so much less capable than rabbis of or people from previous generations, so who knows if we're going to be able to find the right answer. But it doesn't matter, because all that needs to happen is the posek, the person that has to answer these questions, as long as they apply their mind to the material and analyze it properly and they come to a conclusion they feel is correct, that is true in some level. He calls it the difference between emes lahalacha and emes lahora. Like the actual truth, which God knows, it's somewhere with God, and the practical truth that we, that the posek comes to, or the posek comes to that conclusion. And so he says that that's what psak halacha is. He has interesting reading. There's this story in the Gemara of Moshe, where Moshe sees God tying crowns to the letters on the Torah. He asks him, why are you tying these crowns onto the letters? And God says, because in the future, there's going to be a person named Rabbi Akiva, and he's going to make drushes out of the letters. So the way that Rashi understands it is that he was tying those little vitagim, the little like spiky things that are on top of the letters, you know, like in the Sefer Torah, there's like little spiky things. And what God was saying is Rabbi Akiva is going to darshan even those little spiky things, so I have to include that. But the way Moshe Feinstein says understands it, he says that's not correct. He thinks the way to understand it is Moshe saw that God was putting a crown on the text. Instead of saying, the content, the halakha should be what's primary, God put the emphasis on the text, that all the authority is vested into the text, not into the actual ideas behind the text, but into the text, the presentation in the text. So Moshe asks God, how can you do this? Like, it's open to all kinds of interpretation. And the answer is, yeah, because in the future, people are going to use the text and come up with their halakhic conclusions, and that's valid. That's what Rabbi Akiva is going to do. That's what all kinds of other rabbis throughout history are going to do. So in Rav Moshe Feinstein's view, when the posek applies himself to the material and then comes to a conclusion, that is true in a certain sense. And there's an example here, which is, it's getting really late for that kind of example, but the rule of Kiddush B'makom Seuda. I don't know if you've heard of this halacha before. There's a halacha on Shabbos, you have to make Kiddush. And we hold, there's a debate about it in the Talmud, but you have to make Kiddush. There's a rule called Kiddush B'makom Seuda. It has to be in the same place where you eat the Seuda. What does that mean? So classically, there was a debate, what counts as a Seuda in this context? There are two views. One view was of the Gaonim, which was that it doesn't have to be a meal, like bread. It could be any other things that are significant foods, like wine or cracker, mizonot, right? Crackers, something like that. That counts as a seuda. And then there's the other view of Tosfot that you have to actually eat a meal. You can't make kiddush unless you eat a meal there. Yosef turns that Tosfot into a different term. That's a whole debate. Rav Moshe Feinstein comes to this sugya and he creates a third option. Right, he says, what is the basis for this whole rule? The pasuk of the Karata l'Shabbat Oneg. You're supposed to call Shabbos a delight, and the drasha is b'makom kriya sham tia oneg. Wherever you declare the kiddush, wherever you declare the statements about Shabbos, that's where you should have also an oneg Shabbos, some sort of delight, i.e., the eating. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, without going into the weeds there, but you can read it if you like. But he says, what this means is you have to make kiddush every time you eat something basically on Shabbos. Except when you get to the point where you had such a substantial oneg that you really can't, that overshadows everything else, i.e. when you have a meal, then the kiddush on the meal finally exempts you from the responsibility for kiddush. So it's like a middle thing. You have to make it for everything else, and you have to make it for the meal. And so he held that if you go to shul and they make kiddush there, you can eat crackers or whatever. But then when you go home and you're going to have bread, you have to make kiddush again. I don't know what the common practice is. Maybe in America that's the common practice. You have to make kiddush again. The point is though, he has a whole huge long analysis in one of his tshuvas. It's 15 pages long, very long. And he's very thorough in his analysis. Is it borne out? He has analysis of the Gemara and whatever. Did anyone, he tries to say that maybe some people were saying this. Did anyone really say this before him? No, in my opinion, at least, my humble opinion. He is coming up with this position. He feels that this is what the sources are pointing him to. So this is this kind of example. Is it really in the sources? Not 100%. There's play in the sources. You can analyze things and come to one conclusion or another. This is his feeling about how kiddush is supposed to work, about the interrelationship between kiddush and oneg on Shabbos. This is how he feels it makes sense, and that's the basis for his psak. It's like his personality sort of emerging through the analysis. So the question is, can GPT do that? And I don't think so, right? GPT is always based on whatever data it was trained on. All machine learning models are based on whatever data they were trained on. So they can, they can regurgitate information, and they can even mimic sort of the patterns, right? You could ask the GPT to mimic, if you would teach it all the tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein, to mimic the style and the kind of analysis that he did. But you can't say, you can't say to GPT, come up with a new Rav Moshe Feinstein. Like, come up with a new style of, you can't, I don't even know what that would mean exactly. If we're assuming that this is emerging from somewhere beyond the sources, the neshama of the person, the personality of the person, so I don't see how that would be, you'd be able to mimic that in a with the machine learning model, at least not with the technology that exists today. So just sort of to, that's my basic point there. So what do I think in terms of summarizing, what can AI do? Answering basic questions, which would be the same as looking something up in a book, assuming the information is accurate, for sure. I think that there's no question. Dealing with nuances like, loss, hefsed, meruba, shas, atchak, I think is conceivable. You could train the model to deal with it and ask follow-up questions and come to the same kind of answers that, a rabbi would come to today. Coming up with, different perspectives on a question by saying, how would a Rav Avadya Yosef answer this question? How would the Chatam Sofer answer this question? Whatever, also possible. But when you get to higher order levels of psak, where we're really dealing with things that are not in the sources totally, are relying on things which are beyond the sources and beyond the analysis, then I don't see how GPT could do that. It would just be like a sham. Like you could say, you can tell it to sort of be creative and you can actually make it be less accurate. And some people think that that counts as that's like what creativity is. I'm not sure. Right. You can tell it to whatever. But some people say that's what creativity is. It's just like you were predicting things accurately. And then once you messed up and predicted something haywire, and that's how new ideas form. I'm not sure. But it seems to me this idea of the whole religious personality coming to bear on a topic, and that's where the psak is really coming from, I don't see how that can be mimicked, at least with what exists today. So that's some, background. We went through a little bit what GPT is, how it works, how machine learning works in general, and the sort of nature of psak halacha. Is it that there's one answer to every single question or not? Or is there fundamental pluralism there? And we talk about some other concerns. I think the other major concern is this loss of the human element. I think that's true. You don't have a human interaction with a machine, with a chatbot, the same way you have with an actual person. And a lot of psak halacha things come around that. Somebody told me they asked Usher Weiss about AI, and he was very upset. He couldn't handle. He said, we have to keep AI away from Torah and halakha for as long as possible. And he felt that when you go to someone for a psak, or go to a rabbi, it's not just that they're giving you information. It's the whole experience. You're like attaching yourself to the Masorah. It's a Ruach HaKodesh kind of moment, which is designed just for you. And so that whole thing is lost. The whole interaction between the person and sort of like the representative of the whole tradition is lost if you're going to do it this way. So that I definitely hear is it's a valid complaint. Right. Right. So, yeah, well. Right, there's definitely an interaction. Well, what I was speculating was some of that you may actually be able to teach. In other words, if you would give the model like a whole set of cases where people ask questions and you could show them how the rabbi, like the people, there are people in OpenAI, created GPT, that are speculating about creating chatbot therapists. Hundreds of thousands of hours of transcripts of therapists interacting with patients. If you train the model on all of those things, maybe you could actually become an adequate therapist. So I wonder if it would be the same kind of idea. I agree with you. I don't think at the end of the day, there is a human interaction. But I think at least it's conceivable that at least part of it could be replicated. It's a little scary. That also just means the rabbi is like just the smiling face on the whatever robotically created answers or something. But I think that's a reasonable, and that seems to be, maybe it's like a personality question. Some people you talk to will say like, human interaction, whatever. You know, we can teach the robot to answer the questions, it answers the questions and that's it. And other people are much more, feel like that's a significant kind. Yeah. So that is some of the background and food for thought. Yes, it is. Absolutely. I'm going to stop the recording right now.